No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
This Black Friday, get 6 months free when you move your WordPress sites to Kinsta. Enjoy faster load times, no stress when traffic spikes, and hosting you can actually count on. We're G2's number one rated host for WordPress. For a reason. Visit kinsta.com/BF. That's KINSTA.com/BF. Don't miss out. Offer ends December 2nd.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. It's time for a happy show tonight because we're going to be talking about the defense against the Cleveland Browns. And joining me to do that is one of my good friends, Jordan Coe. Jordan, how you doing?
Good, Ken. Glad to be here.
Always great to have you back on. Great to talk football with somebody very knowledgeable. Jordan, you may remember him from a year or two ago from the Situation Room that he did with Gabe Ferguson. Great show. Unfortunately, not still producing episodes. Busy lives in both cases, but hopefully they'll get back to that at some point. But anyway, great to have you back, Jordan. And after a game like this, should be a lot of fun to talk about the defense-led comeback the Ravens had in that second half.
Yeah, it was quite the performance. The only caveat is to remember it was the Browns. And they have a great running back, and we saw that, and I'm sure we'll talk about that later. But there's not a whole lot else on that team.
Okay, well, let me just say, I can adjust for the fact that it's the Browns, but they have a professional offensive line. They may not be that great anymore. They're kind of old, yeah. but you know, they've got a bunch of professional football players playing on that, and then they've got Shedeur Sanders, and he's also, in his debut was terrible in this game. But it's an adjustment. It's not a complete throw it out based on what happened and what they did to Shedeur Sanders. I've never seen a quarterback on puppet strings like he was in this game.
Yeah, the complexity of what the Ravens are bringing on defense is finally where we thought it should be. And, you know, the thing that stands out to me is Malachi Starks. And the Ravens are finally starting to use him like a safety that does more than drop back and cover half the field, which is really all they did, or it felt like that was all they did. I know it was slightly more than that, but that's felt like what they did when they were having a lot of struggles on defense. We saw Starks come on a blitz this week. I don't remember seeing Starks on a blitz in a game before this.
He's blitzed and if a not, few it times. Wasn't,
yeah, but it wasn't as noticeable as it felt like it was in this game. And so, one, I think he's improving his ability to read NFL offenses, but I think the Ravens are starting to open up that package. This is not an unfamiliar story. This should be a very familiar story to Ravens fans because we saw this exact same thing with Kyle Hamilton, where it felt like he was somewhat limited, not making a huge impact. Ravens rolled out the entire playbook once they felt like he was up to speed. And all of a sudden, it was like a light bulb for him and the defense once they did that. And so I think Gilman is a part of that, but I think a lot of that is their willingness to trust Starks more and more and more, and he's paying that back to them in dividends.
He had consecutive great games with an interception. He's also rushed the passer five times in the last two games. This last game was two pressures and two attempts, and that has been a factor. It's great to see him being able to be moved around a little bit. I'm happy they have Gilman now, and they have another guy that they kind of trust to be in the right position in the post when they need him there. But I also am happy to have Starks be able to do a few more things. And more than that, I'm happy that Kyle Hamilton has become the absolute monster at the line of scrimmage he was last year at the beginning and 2 years ago for pretty much the whole season. All right. Lots of mistakes by the offense in this one. The defense overcame those, special teams as well. Boy, muff punt, offsides to give them an extra set of downs. What a shit show.
I can't, you know, I know that there are some folks that are like, oh, this kind of stuff is the stuff that happens in divisional games. But like, the fact that it was a divisional game has nothing to do with Humble jumping offsides. It has nothing to do with Wester trying to catch a punt he had no business even trying to get close to. Mm-hmm. Like, even if that ball lands at the one, you got to let it go because you don't have a read on it and it's caught in the wind, right? Like, the Keaton Mitchell off his hands goes what felt like 30 yards in the air,
yep.
Ball off of Rosengarten's helmet. Like, I mean, I don't.
Yeah, they had the time to call for the infield fly rule on both of those interceptions. That was ridiculous. That was just ridiculous.
It's too bad because I do think that Lamar, and I think he'll still be in the conversation as a top three MVP candidate if the Ravens went out at this point. But I think this game and the Vikings game will be enough to hold him back from actually threatening to win it, which is a bummer because that would have been a really cool way for him to win.
Yeah, it would have been cool, but the Vikings game he wasn't terrible by any stretch. It was a tough game of a lot of blitzes. He outperformed. He actually outperformed by yardage by that much this game, but in terms of the interceptions and whatnot, you just can't forgive that. He did put the ball in danger an additional time in the game, but we're talking defense today. Great pressure in this game. Very solid coverage. You need those two elements together. The fact that the Ravens are kind of seeming to put them together at the right time right now. Now they're playing a lot. They have played some bad teams, but what they did to the Browns was nothing you should be able to do it to any NFL team, frankly.
Well, and the coverage was significantly improved from the prior Browns game. And, you know, whether you want to make that attributed to Sanders and Gabriel versus Flacco, you can do that. Flacco has been very good in some games this year and very bad in some games this year and look just the part of a rookie because I think of his fading skill set. Right. So even if you don't want to compare it apples to apples between a good team versus a bad team or a good quarterback versus a bad quarterback, the Ravens made significant strides in coverage over what we saw from the last Cleveland game. I felt like, and we're just seeing moments, and we saw this in the Minnesota game where McCarthy had tons of time and just nobody was coming open. And Sanders was it felt like Sanders was looking at the same kind of scenarios where what he thought he was going to be looking at wasn't there, or mm-hmm. guys were just passing off and doing the appropriate things. I mean, this is what we expected in week one. I mean, for the most part, and again, other like Starks being the new player and, you know, Washington being gone. But other than that, even this version of this defense, minus Matabike, is pretty much the same set of guys. Now, Jones is here now instead of OA, but that's a plus. I think that's so far shown to be a plus. We're seeing, I feel like we see Jones having more of an impact than that OA felt like he had. But generally speaking, this is mostly an Awuzie, the same set of guys, the same set of concepts, the same package of stuff. It's great to see, but what the heck? why did it take 4 weeks to wake up here?
Well, they've got one other subtraction that they had this last week, which honestly now feels like they got a better player. Keon Martin replaced Humphrey, so that ended up being a big deal. They had some other things happen in this game. They had some players out, like Hill being out really gave an opportunity to Ali and more opportunity to Mitchell in this game, which was kind of nice. Didn't really work out in terms of the Mitchell interception. Nice to see Ali take some shots as a pass blocker. He certainly wasn't perfect at it. Mitchell took almost no shots as a pass blocker, but he did catch. What's this?
He only got one. I think he had 10 passing plays he was in on, and 9 of them he went out and route.
Okay, so yeah, let me see what we had for that. I want to see what our sets and chips look like on this one. All right. Well, anyway. We have him for one set and one chip. So that's if you're saying he went out in a pattern, it'd still be a chip block. He might be called that way. All right. The way I looked at that second half, it was just like, how many times can the defense put the game back in the offense's hand before they finally make good on some of this? And that last punt, the one that went to about the 45-yard line and set up the four-play drive that eventually got the score on the Hurricane Andrews play, Wester wanted no part of it, first of all, when it was going out of bounds. Wester didn't even want to get near the football, but he did, in that same game, he muffed a punt inside the 10-yard line. He caught a punt and returned it to the 21 from, what, the 1 or 2 yard line, right? That was early in the game. I mean, just a miserable game, obviously, for him. He's going to really need to get his head straight this next week, I guess, in terms of what do I do on a punt,
It'll be interesting to see if Tylan Wallace is given some additional reps back there, depending on the situation, right? Like coverage, kind of like when the Ravens would put Ed Reed back there when they felt like needed him. You know, if Wester's not going to have a chance to return because you're within yada yada yards and the Ravens can pick that metric, we might see a little sub in for Wester. It does seem like as he gets closer to the goal line or he gets closer to like peculiar situations, he is. Just thinking a little bit more than he should be, right? Like these are things that should be second nature. He's an undrafted rookie. I don't know if he returned punts in college, or even at this level and going against punters at this level. So, you know, that's, again, the Ravens, and even on defense, the Ravens have a lot of rookies playing a lot of critical roles. I cannot remember a time that the Ravens had three rookie starters by the halfway point of the season that were taking, if not the entirety of the snaps in a game, the most or the second most snaps in a rotation, like within that group. The Ravens, under Harbaugh, just historically don't love to do that.
Okay. I mean, it has happened before. 2002, when they rebuilt the team, they had Reed, Demps, Weaver.
Talking about actually, era.
Yeah. All right.
Well, Harbaugh is just, I mean, and I think we see this a little bit with Peoples being inactive. The Ravens right now ask more of what other teams ask of their rookies to like be aware of or know situationally. And that's just their baseline. And whether you like that or not, I know there are a lot of fans that don't like it. I don't necessarily have a problem with it. But whatever your take is on that, the fact that they are trusting Starks, Buchanan, and Green to essentially be a lead snap taker at each of their positions is a big step forward, but also worthy of looking at this defense and saying, wow, this is an impressive performance from a bunch of rookies.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I've never been high. I've never had more of a quadruple high than I have on the four rookie defenders right now, including Martin, Buchanan, and Starks and Green. They are outstanding talents, and the Ravens are getting a lot out of them, which is a credit to Orr and to Harbaugh and the rest of the coaching staff that's decided it's okay to put them back here like this. Let's talk about the debut of Shedeur Sanders though, too, because it was the story of this game for sure. You probably have seen some of the Josina Anderson comments have you seen her tweets?
No, I haven't seen any of those.
They're actually pretty funny, completely over the top. The Browns fans are kind of on her a little bit about it, but she talked about making a last ditch, you know, against all odds, 3rd and 10 completion for a first down when he threw the ball 2 yards to Jerry Judy and Jerry Judy broke 3 tackles to get to the first down marker. And it's like, what did Shedeur Sanders have to do with that? Really? I mean, Jerry Judy made a great individual play. There's all this stuff and all this stuff. It's basically, she's a enormous excuse maker for Shedeur. And, you know, I'm not an internet tough guy. Do what you want to do. I just thought her comments about it, which were highlighted in an article I saw, just way over the top in terms of how you view Shedeur here. And I'm wondering, you know, what's her stake in this is what I get.
I can't believe how much, and I know that they were trailing and I know that they were trying to come back. I can't believe how much the Browns put the ball in a guy's hands that they weren't preparing to throw the ball on the week and let him throw it. What was it? 14 or 16? I can't remember the number of attempts.
18 I just thought it was attempts. Yeah.
That's a lot for a half for a rookie when the best thing that your offense is doing is running the ball. Right. Now, the Ravens adjusted really well. There was one really bad drive early on. They made some adjustments. They cleaned it up, and there weren't as many running lanes. But at least keep running the ball a little bit more. Let your guy have some play action looks. I don't know. I just – he – and I, you know, I have no takes on him before this game, so I don't have a dog in the fight, but the Cleveland did him zero favors.
I mean, I agree about that. The Cleveland fans are going nuts, of course. My take on this after the game is that he's kind of a cautionary tale for the Baltimore Ravens fans in particular. Not that Baltimore Ravens understand the organization. I was on the Know Your Foe show with the Browns guys, Jake Burns. Okay. And he said, look, if you don't think the Browns are actively solving their quarterback problem, you just don't have a leg to stand on or a brain in your head or whatever it was. Because this is the most desperate organization in the entire NFL to figure out that particular problem. They've never figured it out. The one time they maybe figured it out, they traded it away. They traded away, let it leave in free agency. Forget what it was, but either way, they threw it away. It's obvious the Browns are trying to solve this problem. So Shadur, they thought was Shadur was ready, they put him in there right away. I mean, the only reason not to do that is because you want to somehow divide up the time between Dylan Gabriel and Shadur for the rest of the year. But you definitely, by the end of this year, need to figure out if you have anything with either of them so that you can use the draft capital you have next year, which may be one of the few times they really have the draft capital. We've said that before with the Browns, and they've had it more than a few times, to draft the best quarterback that's out there. And if they really want to do it, they could next year. They may not have the number one pick, but they're going to have, you know, two top 10 picks. They can probably trade for that quarterback if they want to get Mendoza, or if Archie Manning suddenly decides he's coming out. But either way, they could get it done if they wanted to.
Yeah, the Jets are like the existential threat to them in that they have as much or potentially more draft capital to beat any deal that the Browns might want for their guy. But you're totally right. They've got to figure out what they have. I was thinking about that today when I was out on a walk with the dog, and I was like, you know, imagine if even average level Deshaun Watson was healthy and not suspended on a team with this defense. Like that would be a team that I wouldn't want to play. Right. And we're not talking about an elite quarterback. We're just talking about like a middle of his career Joe Flacco. Yeah. That would be a team I wouldn't want to play with this running back, with that defense, you know.
I mean, it could be potentially a decent team. And I did hear that he's supposed to be starting to practice this next week.
I mean, at this point,
who cares? Yeah.
Not who cares. I have this, and who knows if this is like a reasonable take or not, of guys that end up getting a year off that isn't due to injury. Like, I think that they just lose some, like there's something a little bit more that they lose over that year. And we saw that with Watson. I don't, like, he just hasn't played in so long. I would have to see it for him to even be like middle of his career Joe Flacco to believe that he could even do that again. I don't think he could.
I've got to look on OTC or something. Does he have a year left under contract, or maybe even 2 years left under contract? Do they extend him or something? I'm trying to remember what.
I mean, they moved all his money around so much that he's probably stuck there for some amount of time.
Yeah. Let's see. You look it up. I'll bring up the next topic while you do this. And then basically I thought the story of the game in the second half was the pressure schemes that they put in place against Sanders. And by the way, Gabriel did a reasonable job. He played exactly like Gabriel was supposed to play. He had an 88 rating. He's got an 80 rating for the year. He got a 9% sack rate for the year, 9% sack rate for the game. He threw for 5.5 yards per attempt instead of 4.0 where he was for the season. So, when you're talking about what do you expect to get out of Gabriel, you expect exactly that. And then they put in Shadur Sanders and, they just were able to ratchet up the pressure in a way that he could not deal with. And he was, when he wasn't actually under pressure, he was still seeing ghosts and was having a lot of trouble making good throws with ATS even. So it was a very tough afternoon for him. I'm not surprised at his reaction at the end of the game. He ended up sitting on the bench, and LaJonte Wester, you know, obviously his college teammate, had to go over there and visit him.
I mean, this is, again, and this is what's so mind-boggling to me about the Ravens' defense of the first 5 weeks. I was not one of those. I am certainly leaning towards, like, purple-colored glasses or however you want to phrase that in how I am a fan. But there just seemed to be no way that what we saw through the first 6 weeks of this Ravens team was the actual final product of what we were going to get out of this Ravens team. And however you take that for where people land on the Fire John Harbaugh crew, I am still, if they are not in the AFC Championship game this year, I'm ready to move on from him. That doesn't mean that I don't think that the baseline of what this team was when it was at its lowest was much better. This was a team that generated a ton of sacks with an equally inadequate number of pass rushers last year, right? It's the same coordinators. It's the same defensive coordinator. It's the same scheme. There's very little that changed in that regard. Again, the rookies really being the one thing in the early part of the year that might factor into that. But I'm not surprised to see this bounce back, and I'm not surprised to see a rookie quarterback react like that, because that's how rookie quarterbacks have been reacting to playing against Baltimore for however long Baltimore has been in the city.
Yeah, there you go. Ravens up to implied odds of 71.3% to win the division, which are you over or under on that right now?
I mean, I just said that I have purple color glasses, so yeah, I would say I'm over. I'm over. But the Steelers have a tougher schedule. Some of this is Burrow, and if he actually is healthy and can come back and play legitimately, that would be a big – that would be the thing that tilts the wheel in one direction or the other.
To take a stand on 71% with whatever you think you know about Burrow without trying to qualify it a million ways, there you go to purple glasses higher than 71, right?
I would still take the over. And I also think that the Rodgers is not going to last through the end of the season. Mason Rudolph is not that good. And if you can defend a screen, which apparently the Bengals can't, then you're going to be able to stop Mason Rudolph. He's not very good. So if Rodgers isn't on any significant time, it's a lock.
I have not heard anything yet about Jalen Warren and how serious his injury was, but he's a very key player for them as well. I mean, obviously, in terms of what he does for their offense. Let's talk about some other things. Keon Martin, he played 18 snaps. It was all slot corner in the dimes. The Ravens have quit cold turkey on any kind of standard nickel. It's Hamilton at slot corner every single down. It does not matter who you have there. It does not matter if you have the fastest, shiftiest wide receiver. They'll just use Hamilton as a pass rusher, or they'll use him as a slot corner and jam or do whatever. What he gives them is too much at the line of scrimmage to ignore it. And I've really been loving that. But Keon Martin has been playing slot corner when the Ravens moved to dime. And at that time, then Hamilton moves to weak side linebacker next to Roquan. Martin was unbelievable in this game. Unbelievable. 18 snaps. He had 4 drive ending plays personally.
Yeah, he looked great. This one is the one I would caution not reading too much into the end of. So like, you can look at the collective play of a team and say that there are a lot of factors that go into this. Mm-hmm. Cleveland's wide receivers are not very good, and Cleveland's quarterbacks are not very good. They're probably the two weakest parts of their offense. And so this is not to take away from what we saw from Martin, but this is probably the weakest competition that he's going to get from that combination of guys. They don't have a great slot guy. There are many, many, many better slot wide receivers in the league. Hopefully we see more of what we saw from Keon moving forward from here. But this was, if there was a layup to be taken, this is the game that you need to take the layup. And that is a threshold that is well worth, that is worth its weight in gold, right? Players that take the opportunity that are in front of them, that beat the players that aren't better than them, and they're successful in those situations, are valuable as anything else.
Okay, so my question for you is then, okay, that might explain part of what happened at Cleveland, but there's the damning consistency of what he did against Minnesota as well. Minnesota, just the opposite of that in terms of the wide receivers. They have a lot of quality they can throw at you in the slot, including Justin Jefferson, but they have Addison, who can be anywhere X, Y, or Z. And they have, who's the third guy that killed him last week?
Naylor,
right. I was going to say Nolar, but I knew that wasn't right. But Naylor, who had...
No. You are not wrong that they have a much deeper wide receiver core. I don't think very much of J.J. McCarthy. I was texting with a friend during the game, and they were like, aren't you worried about this last drive? And literally, I could show you the text. It was like, I'm not worried about this at all because J.J. McCarthy is trash. Like he had some Dylan Gabriel level throws in that game. Yeah. When it wasn't first read and a route combo, it wasn't there for him.
Right. Well, he's definitely not good. The Ravens got all kinds of pressure on him. And more than anything, they were in such unfavorable down and distance situations because of the false starts that were manufactured somehow by the Ravens. And yeah, I think Ravens had something to do with it.
Definitely by the Ravens.
Yeah. I think the Ravens had something to do with it, but because it just doesn't make any sense otherwise. If you looked historically, this would not pass any two standard deviation or probably even three standard deviation test of home false starts in a game. It doesn't meet the standard. So there was something going on, but I'm not sure exactly how the Ravens were doing it, but I think it was probably legal. And if you think of Harbaugh over the years and what he's done to manufacture advantages, I mean, he's wonderful at it. I mean, the punt holding things that he did in the past on special teams at the end of the Super Bowl, at the end of the Bengals game to get that game over with. I would not put it past him. And I think if there was something like this, I guarantee you he's behind it or keenly involved. He's a central figure in the process. It's not something that Orr went to them and said, hey, look, we can generate some false starts just like this. We don't have to tell Harbaugh. Let's just go ahead and do it.
He does love extracting those like little pieces of value from like those random places. And, just jumping back to Keon Martin, though, I was not trying to say that I don't think that his performance is one that could carry over. I also don't think that we're going to see a lot on the calendar for the rest of this year that is going to require him to have a standout performance. You know, the Bengals really do keep Higgins and Chase for the most part on the outside. The Ravens are probably going to have Wiggins follow Chase when they play them, if he's even going to play. He might be suspended in the first game. Hopefully he appeals it.
Would that be cool? Yeah.
That would be great. We might get some of those matchups and finally get to see that. But like I said, when you have a guy that does exactly what they're supposed to do in those situations, regardless of what the competition is, you can't undercount that. And I think that was kind of the problem that I had early in the season with Teddy Buchanan, that in the moments that he was supposed to be doing the things you would expect him to do, those things weren't happening. Now, there could be a bunch of other moments that we wouldn't know of because we don't know the call and we weren't part of the coaching that he was doing right, that Simpson or other players weren't. But when those moments arrived, he wasn't stepping into that moment. Keon Martin is the exact opposite of that, in that he, right, at least, I don't know the other half of the story, but the half of what you see has been really impressive.
Well, the other thing is, it's not just Keon Martin will always, every snap he takes is going to be basically an Anthony Levine level leverage snap. Whether or not you think his personal responsibilities on the snap are that important, he's always stepping in on a dime package. So it's always going to be a critical time in the game for doing that. And that's, I mean, they had 18 plays in this dime package. They gave up 9 yards on those plays. So half a yard per play. I can take, oh, it was the Browns, you don't understand. I can take a little bit of that, but I'm like, okay, I understand it's the Browns. Our expectations should be lower than 6 yards per play on offense, given this the Browns. But how low do you want me to put my expectation? I can adjust it, but I'm not setting it to -5 yards per play. I'm not setting it to even though there were some ways, we're going to get into some of the pass rush stuff, and there were some negative yards per play totals that they posted under various splits. So anyway, one of the big things the Ravens did, and Keon Martin was a very big factor in it. The Ravens won the high leverage downs in this game. The Browns were 2 of 14 on third down. They were 0 of 1 on fourth down. And guess what? He was on the field for every single one of those. Actually, I don't know if that's true. I think we played Jumbo on the 3rd and 1 or something early in the game, but almost all of them, he was on the field.
Yeah. I mean, like you were saying earlier, the Ravens defensive core from this last draft class plus mm-hmm. undrafted class looks really impressive in terms of what they were able to do.
Yeah. Happy with it. So Cleveland run the ball effectively. Honestly, didn't bother me all that much. They ran for 4.2 yards per carry, but they had a lot of the same issues that the Ravens had earlier this year in terms, and frankly, in this game too, with extremely barbelled results. So they're getting a lot of short gains on some higher leverage moments, and they'd get a first down run for 12 yards and then a first down run for 17 yards. And those plays, while they're good and they change field position, they're not as great in terms of being drive sustainers. And so you have to somehow have a way to generate plays used and then also get first downs by the run to make it really, really exciting to me.
Yeah, you need to have Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry to make an offense like that work. I mean, and we would be, I know we're talking about the defense, but we would be so utterly maddened this season. Well, pun not intended. We would be so, it would just be so mind-boggling if you took away the random Derrick Henry 50-plus yard runs, the just like the lightning throws that you get from Lamar sometimes on those reads, and when he just drops it in the bucket and does some of that stuff. You took that away from this offense this year, it would be ugly. It would be ugly.
Right.
And that's kind of what we saw from Cleveland.
You might want to trade it in for some average offense.
I would love to trade it in. Average.
That's what everybody wants. So variance.
Not Tom Monken.
Variance by play. Value of variance by play accrues to the defense, folks. We've talked about it many times. Okay. So anyway, let's talk packages a little bit. Ravens didn't play a whole lot of different packages. They played two snaps at jumbo. Got one of them was on that first third and one play. Then they played another at the goal line. Stop for zero, and then they had a stop for minus three where Urban made a really nice play near the goal line to put him back to third and six. Then they didn't get it after the muff punt. They had to kick a field goal. They looked like the Ravens offense, frankly, in a goal-to-go situation there.
Yeah, that's a great description. I do think that their offensive line is getting a little bit old, and you know the Ravens don't have the defensive line that can push other teams around. They don't have that elite edge, like the Clowney Suggs. Like that is kind of the one missing ingredient, it does feel like. And even when Tavius was healthy, I thought he might be pushing into like the edge setter role in that regard. He didn't bring it. We didn't see a lot of that early on in the season before he got hurt. But they really stuffed him. I mean, the Ravens have embodied and really lean into the bend don't break mentality on defense, and they are willing, and they don't get upset off stuff that's happening in the middle of the field. They're not going to let you beat them deep. They're going to trust their guys to tackle underneath. And we've seen a lot better tackling from both Buchanan and Roquan Smith. And that allows you to play that style of defense a lot more. And then they really just tighten up them when they get down into the 20.
Well, it's been a certainly a good run of four games here. And I don't really include the Rams game in that. I didn't think they played that well against the Rams. The Rams certainly made a lot of mistakes. They played better than they had before. And so we had this, you know, night and day kind of look at what was going on defensively in that Rams game, but they played a hell of a lot better beginning the following. That was the Bears game, or that was the, I think it might've been the Bears
game. It was the Bears game.
Yeah,
because it was the first win in the sequence.
That was the Huntley game, and the Bears have been unstoppable since. They're on a 7-game winning streak if it weren't for that game, or an 8-game winning streak if they had won that game. But anyway, we talked about jumbo. They played one snap of base. It was a run for 3 yards. They just don't play the base defense anymore. Then they played big nickel. 28 snaps. So really the Ravens' answer to everything right now is big nickel. If you play 11, it's big nickel. If you play 12, it's big nickel. And by the way, that's most of what any NFL team does is 11 and 12. There's very little variation from that. The teams that have a fullback can play some 21, but there's not that many teams with a fullback, as you know. So playing big nickel and having that basically for 28 snaps, they've been outstanding with that in the first, I guess it was 4 games. I believe this is the fifth game they've been having Hamilton back at big nickel, but 28 plays, 5.4 yards per play. Almost seems like not that good given that it was the Browns, but it's not that bad either, honestly.
Well, and you know, there were a couple big chunks, I think, in this set of plays, I'm not remembering which play it was, but there were a couple probably big plays that came into this that really drive that average way up.
Yeah, I want to say the 25 yard play, they were still in it, what they were in big nickel still for the 25 yard play late, and some of the early plays they had, they were in it, like a run for
the runs
19, a run for 12, and a run for 13. Those are all big nickel snaps. So they did. They certainly had a predominance of good plays when the Ravens happened to be in that. And honestly, yeah,
I think one thing you feel was the Fannin play, the long Fannin pass, was that out of big nickel?
It was. It was the first snap of that drive. The 25 yard play was big nickel. And they went to Don.
Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's changing the game, Mood.com. They created an entirely line of functional gummies, 100% federally legal THC blends, discreetly delivered right to your doorstep. And here's the best part. You can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with the promo code Ravens. Now, I've tried a bunch of their gummies myself. Each one's totally unique. The Sleepy Time gummies knock me out right away. They help me unwind fast, leave me refreshed the next morning. The Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for when your day just isn't going the way you want it to go. What makes Mood special is how they pair the THC with natural herbs and adaptogens. You won't find blends like this at any local shop. They've got gummies designed for focus, relaxation, clarity, even energy, all made from cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no shortcuts, just high-quality weed you can trust. Plus, Mood backs everything with a 100-day satisfaction guarantee. So head on over to Mood.com, check out their amazing selection, and don't forget to use the promo code Ravens at checkout to save 20% off your first order.
This Black Friday, get 6 months free when you move your WordPress sites to Kinsta. Enjoy faster load times, no stress when traffic spikes, and hosting you can actually count on. We're G2's number one rated host for WordPress. For a reason. Visit kinsta.com/BF. That's KINSTA.com/BF. Don't miss out. Offer ends December 2nd.
No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary. Based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
And for the rest of that drive, they finally got Keon Martin on the field. You know what's what. You know? All right. Anyway, they didn't play any jumbo nickel. They haven't played too much of that in the last 4 weeks, maybe one snap or something. They played five snaps of uncovered nickel. Now, they've been playing this a little bit. And this is when they play with only one outside linebacker, but they put Brent Urban on the outside, treat him sort of like a pseudo edge, pseudo outside linebacker. And he's been effective in that. They don't really treat him like an edge setter the same way because they always want somebody fast outside him so he can handle the tackle and somebody else has to crash the edge sort of thing. It's an interesting dynamic and a very, frankly, very creative solution by Orr, I would say, to work that. They have 5.4 yards per play on those as well. They really handled the run well on that, 4 runs for 6, but 1 pass for 21. And that is going to be one of the weaknesses when you have Urban on the field and you're trying to rush the passer, you're probably not going to do as well.
And, you know, this is also for the folks out there that apparently think that Peoples has done something to John Harbaugh's dog.
Yeah.
I think that Brian and Urban fit the mold of exactly what you're talking about. The Ravens feel like they need Jenkins. When you have Jenkins and Jones and you can put them on the field together in the situations that you need those big guys, then Peoples is not nearly as valuable as a guy in the rotation. I think he's a super valuable guy given a potential injury. God forbid something like that were to happen. I think that great development. We've seen a great skill set. I think that in games where you feel like you need that inside and you want some pass rush because of that weakness, I think you're going to see him activated. But exactly what you're talking about is why Urban and Brian are getting so many snaps. It just fits the mold of what this has to look like with Kyle Hamilton up at the line of scrimmage every play.
Okay, we've had the point made, and this may be in a question. If I'm jumping starting this, I'll miss this. But you look at Peebles and you look at Brian; they're not terribly dissimilar players in the sense that both are a little bit undersized weight wise to play that 3-tech spot. They're more like a natural 5, and Brian weighs about 290, and Peebles is a little bit smaller than that, maybe 285, 290 kind of thing. Peebles is much more of a low to the ground, leveragey player who tries to get underneath the pads of an opposing guard, penetrate underneath the arm often of an opposing guard and penetrate, and does some things well. Brian, we've seen good pass rush from him. It's a lot of bull rush. I'm not saying he doesn't have any rip move or anything else that he uses, but it's a lot of bull rush. He's walking back some guys into the quarterback. I just think the Ravens probably think he's a little bit better right now than what they can get out of Peebles. And he does really play very similar snaps. He's often on the field as the second defensive lineman at three tech with Jones on a likely pass play. So they do some of that.
My eyeballs must be lying to me. I feel like Brian is a solid 30 pounds lighter than Peebles. And maybe just like some. What you see online says the same, but Brian's also 4 inches taller than Peebles.
Right. That's right.
So that must be the thinning factor.
Yes. He's taller and longer, definitely, but he's undersized to play a three tech anyway, just specifically. And I know the rest of the league has different expectations of what a three tech should be, but we're like, okay, wait a minute. Our nose tackles should weigh 350 to 370 pounds because we've got four of those on the team right now. The Ravens really do have like three guys in Okoye, and they had Tupou at one point, but they had Okoye, Jones, and Jenkins. Who all weigh 340, 360, 370. And which is, by the way, probably particularly when it was Tupou, they had three guys who weighed 1,080 pounds who were all active on the roster at the same time. I doubt that's ever happened in NFL history before, but nobody tried to research that, you know, as much as I would say, I'll nominate that for the heaviest line ever. Tell me any others that you can find that were heavier than that.
This is a slight tangent, but Jenkins has put on a ton of weight. I remember when he played for the Raiders, he was not that big of a guy. And I think that Peebles is playing closer to 310, and he's 6 foot tall, and Brian is still playing at 290 and a 6 foot four. So I would quibble with you a small amount that's the same build of a player.
I'm not saying it's the same build, but Peebles is lighter than that. He doesn't weigh 300 pounds. And he's trying to get by as a smaller player. He needs to be quick, you know, to play that three tech spot the way he wants to play it. I for whatever reason, the Ravens have decided that Brian is the better pass rusher. And we don't have to debate anything about Peebles or Brian. It's not really the central topic on the Ravens defense at this point, but it's interesting that the choice has been made that way. And they're looking at these things. They're trying to decide who will help the team more. Unlike the 75% of the vocal people who want to talk about the Ravens who say they've got the wrong guards in there, or that Roquan Smith is finished, or any of these other things that they were saying 4 weeks ago and they're not saying now. The guards are still talking about, by the way, but plenty of other players.
The guards are the problem.
This is a cautionary tale of Shedeur Sanders' part. Is the Browns fan basically said, how could he be worse? How could he be worse than what we have with Gabriel? And in the Browns' case, it's not really worse in any kind of macro sense because they don't care about winning the games. They care about getting the number one draft pick. Brian can actually Shedeur can help you get there if you want the number one draft pick. But can he play worse than Dylan Gabriel? He absolutely can. Okay. And by the way, the Ravens guards, if you want to say that the problem, well, the Ravens are a contending team. First of all, they can't take a chance on putting a bad player out there and having that torpedo their chances to win the AFC North. They have to win the AFC North. And the Ravens coaches are trying to evaluate this, you know, week after week, and are still coming to the conclusion that the two guys they have out there are the two better choices. And you know what? There's every possibility the new guys could be worse. There's every possibility Emory Jones could be worse. There's every possibility Ben Cleveland could be worse, even though we've seen him play better at times in the past. We haven't seen a play in what, 3 years? I mean, it's been a while since we've even seen Ben Cleveland play. And Corey Bullock, we literally know nothing about the guy other than he had a pretty good preseason. And we've seen that not hold up for some other players.
The only area that I would quibble with you there is that the Ravens have been willing to fuss with rotations before.
Yeah, I think that.
And experiment whether or not it was better or was not better. In real time against equal competition in full drive capacities. And then been like, I would also be good. Like, if they brought Blaine Cleveland in and he blew two blocks, take him out and don't put him back in, right? Like, I would be fine with that. For all the Quinn and Williams talk, and I would have been happy for Quinn and Williams for a second. Like, and for all the, like, you know, what's the guy that went to the Eagles? Phillips talk, like, and, oh, the Ravens needed to add any spots. I thought that the spot that I was most disappointed they didn't trade for was a guard.
Okay, let's go through the Ravens' history a little bit. The recent history, I'm not going to pull into the 2002 or 2015 or anything like that. The last 3 years, the Ravens have rotated at tackle. Offensive freaking tackle. They've rotated at and on both sides, I believe. They rotated Stanley in and out of games last year with McCary. They rotated on the right side with McCary and Rosengarten. So they did it on both sides. Throughout Marlon Humphrey's career, they've had a variety of rotations that have involved even him in terms of getting him off the field when they've had three corners for two spots. So that hasn't been a problem. They've rotated Simpson and Buchanan. They basically took Simpson out of their starting weak side linebacker role last year in a matter of stages. They took him out to that, then they went to the dime, then they did rotations with Buchanan, then all of a sudden he's lost the job. So it's not like they've never done rotations. They've done a ton of it. They Harbaugh is perfectly willing to try that. What he's seeing in practice and what Warhop is telling him, or whatever the hell, however they're coming to this decision, they've decided it's not the right choice for right now. And I think on some level, we have to respect that. These guys have been extremely good to us, and they have knowledge we're not privy to. And you know, for whatever we thought about Ben Cleveland, there's probably some reason he shouldn't be on the field too. I don't know what it is. I haven't observed it personally, and I have observed him play occasionally well, but I have to accept the fact that Harbaugh and Joe D before him and Warhop now both understood that this guy wasn't really ready to play or committed to play.
Yeah, no, that's not my qualm with the guard position, and it was not trading for anybody else.
Okay, but your problem was not trading for a guard. So you're saying you accept the fact that the guys on the Ravens currently aren't up to the task either. If Harbaugh and Warhop,
I'm not saying the issue is that they're not letting the backups play and that the guy that's behind Filele is better than Filele. I'm saying they needed to go find someone that was better than all of them. I mean, even called the Jets about John Simpson, right? Like, you're talking about a guy that's like barely making more than the league minimum. I mean, Ken, like, we get him over here and take a look, right? Like, it's been just as bad. Voorhees was a part of two hits on Lamar this game that were abhorrent. There was one where he could have down-blocked the guy that Linderbaum was on. Instead, he turned around and looked behind him to find Lamar, and the guy ran around him.
I saw the grade that PFF had on Voorhees, and I don't come anywhere near that. We're substantially lower. That we'll discuss that on the offense show tomorrow. I haven't seen any of the grades.
I think John Simpson could be a guy that you could rotate, and you might find out was a little bit more consistent than either of those guys. That's all I'm saying.
You know, if you're gonna shoot for the top of the market somewhere, don't shoot for
sure. I would have been fine with Ruiz. I would have been fine with any other guard being added to the, like, I would have been fine adding another guy to the mix, because the guys that you had behind Voorhees and Filele don't have the upside or the quality.
All right. So here, one of the issues with that is the roster spot is not free, and they've already got 10 offensive linemen already. They have four tackles and six interior. I think they only have nine. So anyway, the next guy they add, it's a hard cut for somebody they have to make. So if you're going to do it, you got to go to the top of the league. You can't shoot around the middle. And that's a problem the Ravens offensive line has, is that everybody is pretty damn mediocre. It's not that there's no easily replaceable guy, because Falele's not that terrible. He's above the replacement level. And Voorhees, he's not that terrible. He's above the replacement level. And in fact, he's played well enough recently that there's no way in hell they're replacing him. Over the last 7 weeks or so, he's had a bunch of B grades as I've scored it. He's improved in terms of where he is with PFF. There's still much, he's lower than Falele in terms of their grading. But one of the things they do is they have the disproportionate pass and run blocking grades. It doesn't make any sense. And buries players like Falele, who are good pass blockers and bad run blockers, while pedestaling players like Linderbaum, who are just the opposite. By the way, Linderbaum had a great game this week. He allowed a sack in theory, but that sack was way after 3 seconds. So it didn't even, it was a made block as I scored it. So he had a great game. It was good to see too, because man, he really shit the bed in the previous game. Okay. Let me move on with packages a little bit. We're going to get through this. We're just going to jump through this. So we go down some rabbit holes. This kind of excitement is the organic excitement is value on podcasts to itself. Anyway, Dime, they ran 18 snaps, 9 yards. I already said this, 0.5 yards per play. They have three different dimes they're playing. They're all adequate. They used five when they had Simpson on the field as this roving pass rusher. They used several with three outside linebackers in this game. I think those were the only two they used in this game, but they have a third one where they put, now I won't get it right if I say it now. I'll wait. But anyway, 13 pass. They had five runs for 19 yards against the dime. 13 pass plays for negative 10 yards. 13 pass plays for minus 10 net yards against the dime. They got it down on third down. Anyway, no quarter. And I we'll get to the story here in a minute, which is really, to me, is the story of this game, which is the pass rush. And Orr had been fairly unwilling to use a lot of deception. This game, rookie quarterbacks, he let the deception out. In particular, he really unleashed it on Sanders. And boy, the guy had no answer for it. No answer at all. But, you know, this is one game where you can probably say poor Shadur and it doesn't sound too terrible.
Yeah, totally. I think he was dealt a bad hand.
All right. Ample time, space, ball, quick pressure. We need to talk about this a little bit first. The Browns quarterback had 8 ample time, space opportunities for the whole game. By the way, Jackson only had 5 the whole game. And the Browns weren't rushing a lot of numbers either, which is exceptionally bad. But ample time, space, 8 plays, 28%. It's right on average, I would say, about 28%. About 2 out of 7 you should have the ample time and space. 68 yards on those plays, 8.5 yards per play. That's exactly the expectation. In my model, 8.5 yards per pass with ample time and space is exactly what you should get. So they made good on those opportunities. Even the lousy Browns quarterbacks who can't do anything right. Remember that. We have to adjust our expectations down to -5 yards per play. They still did exactly what they were supposed to do with ample time and space. All right. Ball out quick. 9 plays. That's 31% of the total snaps. They had 21 yards with ball out quick. 2.3 yards per play. 33 yards below expectation, which is 6 yards per play for ball out quick. What did you see in this game that made their ball out quick passes so bad?
This is the other evolution, other than Malachi Starks, that I think that the Ravens defense, when you watch the first maddening 5 weeks of defense and you watch it now, and they're not playing 18 yards off the line of scrimmage from the cornerback position. They're not, it's not a, you come to me, and then once you stem your break, then I decide what I'm going to do. It's the defense dictating to the other team what you have to do, that I'm going to force you to the outside because I don't have help to the inside, or I'm going to let you go to the inside because there's a safety waiting for you on the inside, right? I'm not going to let you take this quick pass that's in front of me because I'm going to be breaking on the ball because I know that I've got help behind me now. I know what I'm looking for. I'm better coordinated with everybody else that's on the defense around me. So there's a lot more aggression that you're seeing out of Ravens defenders, where it felt like for the first 5 weeks of the season, they were really playing on their heels. They were giving a lot of space and they were reacting to what the offenses were doing. And now they're saying, hey, we have some sense of what we think you're going to do. We have emergency backup plans built in around that, but we're going to trust our instincts and play against the things that are going to work. And that's what will take away these ball out quick games. The Ravens have always, they've been good against teams that like to get the ball out quick. Cincinnati loves to do that. And the Ravens often are very good at shutting down those screens. Also, it's about being physical. Roquan and Teddy play a part in this. They have to be running sideline to sideline and pushing through blocks, picking up guys on the backside of that stuff. Like, it ends up making a really big difference. We've seen both of them make a couple big tackles, I think, that were at the end, tail end of play. So not like the Roquan shooting the gap and making the play in the backfield, but chasing a guy and actually getting to him and not missing some of those tackles too.
I don't think you hit on the most important factor, which is Kyle Hamilton's at the line of scrimmage now, takes away the strong side of the football field. So
that too.
Yeah, there is that. Yeah. And but there are a lot of reasons why their Polak quick should be lower, but they should also have some ability to do it. Judy commands some sort of respect, so you're going to be able to slant the ball to him occasionally. You know, they've got tight ends who are not terrible, and then Njoku and Fannin, who are probably the highlights of that offense in terms of, that, well, certainly that position group is in terms of what they bring to the field. And you know, I would think they'd have had some ability to get the ball off quickly, but the Ravens are playing good team defense and they did a good job of stopping that. And I'm sure they got helped out some by Shadur and some passing lanes being blocked visually, even if they didn't actually bat down a pass at the line of scrimmage. At least I don't remember that they had one in this game. They might've touched one, but I don't really remember. They had a bunch against Minnesota. So then we got the pressure. Okay, the Ravens pressured the quarterback 12 times in this game. And a couple things about this. First of all, 12 pressures and 8 ample time space, that's really good. You want a 3-2 relationship is fantastic. 6-5 relationship would be fantastic. But anyway, 3-2 is really good. 41% is also quite good. The Browns had -8 total yards when they were pressured. -0.7 yards per play. The standard is 3.5 yards per play on those plays. So they came in 4.2 yards below that between the two quarterbacks. 3 sacks were on that and 1 turnover. In total, they were 50 yards below expectation. Can that be right? Yeah, 50. They should have gotten 42 and they got -8. 50 yards below expectation for those plays. Now, it's a different story when you look between Gabriel and Shadur, and this is a part of it can always be worse than Gabriel underperformed his opportunity set by 3 net yards. Not good. He didn't have a great half of football, but he did not turn the ball over correctly. The only turnover was Sanders in the second half. And so he got sacked one time, which is, you know, you'd prefer he didn't get sacked at all, but he underperformed his opportunity set by 3 yards. I don't think the Browns should take that as anything but a big win from that first half of football. The fact that he basically managed the game the way he did.
Yeah, I mean, the statistics tell the story. I think the only, and you can't even say it was all just trail time for Sanders either, because he initially came in and they weren't trailing. I do think that, I think that they came in and threw the ball a lot more in that situation than they were doing any favors for anybody, you know, in that situation. But, you know, and also, again, you're not giving guys first team snaps. This is also part of the result that you get to.
Okay. All right. And then Sanders came in the game and he managed to underperform his opportunity set by 81 yards. Now, there was also a 15-yard intentional grounding in that that's not included. It should be, because it's really just a 15-yard sack. That's the equivalent of that play. Yeah. He really underperformed his set by 96 yards. He did that over only 18 passes. So that's -5.3 yards. Or 5.3 yards below expectation per pass. It's not like he expected him to get about 6 yards per play, and he really, you know, delivered 0.3 yards per play after the intentional grounding is factored out. 5 yards for Sanders on 18 pass plays net.
How many of the blitzes were against Gabriel and how many were against Sanders?
That is an excellent, excellent question. So they blitzed on the very first play of the game and they blitzed one other time at the end of the half for the sack. That was the beginning of the third quarter. Only one blitz. Yeah, that's interesting. Only one blitz against Gabriel on the first play of the game. And they blitzed 11 times against Sanders. The blitzes against Sanders, by the way, here's the individual plays. S-13 with a forced fumble, interception, and then a double blitz where they got an S-14. Then a single blitz where all they got was an incomplete pass with a quarterback hit. Then they got another double blitz with 14 and 24 coming, incomplete quarterback hit by Starks. Then they got another double blitz, Hamilton and Starks, incomplete with a pressure by Starks. And then they got one more blitz, 0 and 38 in this case, so Roquan and Martin, and they got an incomplete ball out quick where Awuzie knocked the ball away. And that was a play in the end zone, by the way. That's a play in the end zone.
I am nothing if I'm not self-serving, as you know, Ken. And our sample size here tells me that it lines up with exactly what I was saying earlier, which is that they didn't ask Gabriel to do any of this, and they asked Sanders coming in cold off the bench to do all of it. And so, and Sanders' net average of his yard, like, underperformance was -3, and Sanders was only -5.3. So that's not that much worse given those scenarios, like, given those circumstances.
5 yards of difference per pass?
Didn't you say that? Well, what was Sanders' one blitz play performance under? So Sanders only, or sorry, Gabriel only took one snap against the blitz.
That's
and
right.
And it was for, wasn't it for 3 yards below
okay,
the
so,
net?
So let me go. Oh, okay. So his snap against the blitz was a ball out quick for 2 yards. So he would have lost four yards to it. But the point is that here, the ATS, BOQ, and pressure is already factored into that that opportunity set for each of those players. If they're under pressure, they should throw for 3.5 yards is what my model is saying.
But we're not comparing. You can't compare what they asked. They gave Gabriel a whole half. And
they gave Sanders a whole half too.
And he didn't experience any of the things that Sanders experienced.
Okay, you're right. I mean, they definitely. You're absolutely right that Orr, you know, had a really good game as a coordinator, and put Sanders on puppet strings in that second half in a way that we have rarely seen occur in recent time for a Ravens DC. Maybe not since McDonald left.
And that probably makes it tough. It also, that's an interesting like angle too, in the sense that what you did in the first half is completely different from what you did in the second half. And so even if they were like prepping Sanders at halftime, they're like, this is what we're seeing.
Yeah.
This is what it's going to be. This is what they're going to do. And then he comes out and he's like, what the F is going on?
Yeah. Hey, rookie, get ready to play here. I mean, they had more time on the sidelines during some of the Ravens drives.
Sure.
Than they had
sure.
Time,
sure.
So.
Sure.
Anyway, let me talk a little bit more about the pass rush. Then we'll call it quits for this first show and we'll move on here. Or use 10 rushes of 5+. Now, a lot of times that means you have some 5, some 6, some 7. They're all 5s. He didn't go any odd number. He didn't go crazy with any numbers in this game. So 10 times he rushed 5, and I don't have this up in front of me, which means I'm being extremely prepared for this. And let me just bring it up here in terms of what the pass rush by numbers was. Okay. So when they rushed 5, 10 plays, -25 yards, 2 sacks, 1 turnover. Rushing 5. That's all it was. They did that some in the first half. 2 times. So 8 times in the second half. All right. Then they rushed 4, 18 plays, 106 yards, so 5.9 yards per play, 1 sack. And then they rushed 3 one time for 0 yards. So obviously, rushing numbers really worked in general, but against Sanders in particular. It worked. In the first half, actually, they only did it one time on that first play. Just one time. It was the same overlapping play. Anyway, anything to say about that before I move on?
it just feels like Zach Orr is also stepping into his moment. He took a lot of heat early on in the season. He took a lot of heat early on in last season. And Dean Pees was – a lot of people were like, oh, well, Dean was here, and he was a big part in kind of – what Orr was doing in the second half last year. And whether that is true or not, he's not here this year. There were no structural changes in the coaching staff this year. And Orr is doing some really fun stuff, like the fake corner blitz against Minnesota last week. There was another one of those that I saw this week. He's just doing some interesting stuff that is above and beyond what you would just think a good defensive coordinator was doing. And I'm glad to see it.
Angela of 85 came with a question. We'll handle this one now since it's on topic here. He says, hey, hi, Ken. Since LA, the defense has been playing very well, is Orr now a head coaching candidate?
I think unlikely, but.
Unlikely for 26 or unlikely ever?
Unlikely for 26. I think that he is slated to be John Harbaugh's replacement.
Okay. I don't think I'd go there. It could happen. I think he's a guy who, I would have said he probably his chance had dropped some to be a head coach based on what happened to the Ravens earlier this year. Now I'd say it's back up and he's at 40% that he is a head coach at some point for the rest of his coaching career.
I mean, it was a choice for the Ravens to like make. To let Anthony Weaver leave.
Yeah.
and Zach Ward to stay. And that's the thing that signals to me that he, like, they like, they think he's a player guy. They know him. They know his commitment to the team. They know John Harbaugh's clock is ticking. They let McDonald walk. I think they would much prefer the candidate, whenever the time comes, be one that's coming internally. I don't know. I think he's on the inside track to be the Ravens' next head coach.
Yeah, the Ravens have had zero internal hires at the head coach position in their history. I mean, they've only had three head coaches, but Mark Jabroda, outside guy, although he had a Baltimore roots, but an outside guy. And I guess he'd been with the Colts last before that in the 90s, right? And then he came over. And then Billick, of course, was a, you know, offensive mind from the Vikings. And then Harbaugh, special teams coach from the Eagles. And, you know, so they've gone through these extensive hiring processes whenever they've hired. I think they have a strong predilection for internal advancement to coordinator positions. I don't think they necessarily have to hire the CEO. And in a sense, it's a different silo of responsibility. I don't think that Bisciotti reaches down into the football operations ranks below either DaCosta or Harbaugh. And, you know, DaCosta would have nothing to say, although he'd been part of the interview process on a coaching hire. But Bisciotti at the head coach level, that's a direct report of his, and he's going to hire for that. And they, by the way, they put out a lot of information on the head coach hire in the past. So particularly when Harbaugh was hired, there's a great article about it. That they put out for all the season ticket holders in terms of what their process was and everything. Somebody's asked me for that, by the way. I forgot who you were, first of all, that asked me about the thing. So please send me another DM. And the second of all is I have to actually ask the Ravens for it to get it from them. But it was really a great piece.
Yeah, and I don't doubt that they would still go through a process like that, but they know, or I think that Bisciotti probably was involved in the Orr retirement process when he had to make a decision about, like, his health versus playing. I think that they, like, he knows everybody, and they all really like him, and they like him as a human. Like, you're not bringing a guy back that was a player that you thought could be ascendant if you didn't really like him at this level and giving him a shot when he really didn't have any coaching experience before that, right? He couldn't have. This is so not that far away from his coaching career. So maybe I'm reading something that's not there. I think Orr will be a head coach somewhere in the next 4 years. Okay. I think it's probably going to be Baltimore.
Okay.
That would be my guess.
What's your probability on Orr being a head coach? You could say in the next 4 years if you want to. I don't think it matters too much.
Anymore. Oh, in the next 4 years, I think Orr will be a head coach, like, at an 80% plus level.
Oh, no. I'll let you lay me 4-1 on that. And other than my desire not to make futures bets under the current tax environment, yes, I would be excited about making that wager with you. I don't think anything is that sure. And all it takes is a setback that would force Orr to rebuild his reputation over a period of years, potentially. So it's easy for something like that not to happen. Maybe I'm too low at 40% ever. Maybe it should really be 55 if we're Delphi-ing this or something. They talked about Eric Bieniemy for years and the guy never got a head coaching gig.
But that was an Andy Reid problem. Or the only thing that I would say here is, look at the way that the rookies have performed on this defense this year.
Yeah, that's good.
How it's transformed. And if I'm trying to find a head coach, I want a guy that can coach up young guys like that. And I want a guy that's going to be the other thing that we're seeing now is guys like Vrabel and Campbell being the ones. And, like, we don't really hear from Orr that often, so I don't know what he's like as, like, a player advocate. But if he is that ferocious player advocate, and if you play inside linebacker, my guess is you got a little of that in you, then I think that's just, there's something extra to that appeal these days. Those are the things that make me think that the percentage is a bit higher right now.
Yeah, well, he learned from C.J. Mosley, who he played with, and you know, he's been around the Ravens organization. I'm sure he's met Ray Lewis several times at least, because Ray's in the building from time to time, no matter what. I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to call this here. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about some of the deceptive elements. We'll start that off in the next show. So I'll get you to cross over and listen. We'll leave you with this cliffhanger here. But the spoiler is that everything Orr tried worked in this game from a deceptive standpoint. And most of it was perpetrated upon one Shedeur Sanders in that second half that was entertaining as hell. But Jordan, great having you on Talking Football. Where can folks talk football with you online?
Yeah, you can find me on Discord. It's my Discord's at Flash Jordan K without the second A, so Jordan without an A. I'd love to talk to you there.
J-O-R-D-N?
Yeah, that's it.
Okay. Wow, that's it. Okay. Arcane, but okay. We're good.
You know, I came up with it when I was 13, Ken, and it stuck.
Okay. All right. Other folks out there, thanks so much for listening. As always, we really appreciate the questions. Quality of questions has been fantastic in the mailbag. We got a lot to go over in the second half of the show. Use hashtag film study mailbag to ask questions, make your comments. If you want to grandstand about something, I'll put it out there. We'll probably respond to it too, but we'll let you soapbox a little bit in terms of what you'd like to say about a particular topic. As always, if you could do one thing for the show, write us a review, like and subscribe on YouTube, or tell that one person about the show that maybe doesn't know about it already. Jordan, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks for having me again.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study. Oh,